If you have got access to the events calendar for this FAQ, you'll see the title is "Shouldn't You Be the Anarcho-Socialist Party of Great Britain?" And it begins by saying, "A persistent opponent once used to make a point of calling us that in the hope it would annoy us. It didn't. In fact, some members even agreed." Well, I probably would have been one of those members that sort of agreed and still sort of do. Why? Well, I'll try and explain. Right. I'll go back, first of all, to August 1996, a long time ago, when a reader of the Socialist Standard sent a letter to the journal asking why we would part ideological company with anarchists. After all, the reader argued, anarchists shared our disdain for the state and for the idea of vanguards leading the workers and telling them what to do. So this letter said, "Can't anarchists and socialists work together?" Well, there was an extensive reply in the Standard. I'm not going to read out the whole thing, but I'll sum it up. Its basic point was, there are anarchists and anarchists, so it depends what you mean. It pointed out that some early influential anarchists like Proudhon and Max Stirner opposed common ownership and instead stood for individualism and a free market economy, seeing democracy and majority decision-making as tyranny. It went on to say that there were anarchists who advocated armed risings against the state. And an example of that, many of us know, would be class war. There were religious anarchists, lifestyle anarchists, and reformist anarchists. However, the reply does concede that some anarchists do indeed favour the same kind of classless, stateless, moneyless society that we in the SPGB do, a society of from each according to ability to each according to needs. But the difference the reply sees is that those anarchists who favour this kind of thing usually see its achievement as coming not through majority democratic action via the ballot box, but in some other way, maybe a mass popular uprising or a general strike or workplace occupations or in some other unspecified way. So the reply to this letter ends by saying, yes, we can work with this type of anarchist if they can abandon their prejudice against democratic political action via elections. And that's a small or a big difference, depending on the way you look at it. Okay, well, that was August 1996. I've got to go back even further now, because 10 years before this, in October 1986, Freedom, the then oldest surviving anarchist newspaper in Britain, and perhaps anywhere, published a 100th centenary edition, which means it was first published in October 1886, so well before the Socialist Standard started publication. And this centenary edition took the form of a collection of around 50 short essays, seeking, according to its introduction, to embrace the widest range of contemporary anarchist opinions, styles, and subjects. If you're able to look, if you've got access to the useful links page, you'll see there, quite small actually on my screen, but you'll see the front page of this edition of this sort of little booklet was produced. It's a sort of thick magazine, actually, Freedom 100 Years. You see the front page there, and there's also the back page. The back page is quite interesting, actually, because historically, because if you're able to read it, the thing that they've reproduced at the top was a lecture by William Morris at Grafton Hall, Tottenham Court Road, on Friday, 10th of March, 1893, at 8 p.m., and it was on communism in aid of the Freedom Publication Fund. And it says the lecture will be preceded by vocal and instrumental music. Ticket sixpence. I bet that was good. William Morris, after all, that was Freedom's 25th anniversary. No, it wasn't the 25th anniversary. No, the illustration below relates to Freedom's 25th anniversary in 1911, when there was tea at the Food Reform restaurant in Holborn to celebrate the 25th anniversary of Freedom. So anyway, in October 1986, celebrated its 100th anniversary, and it featured pieces from short pieces from a wide range of anarchists of the time and of previous times, people like Philip Sansom, Lawrence Otter, Alex Comfort, Colin Ward, George Woodcock, Donald Room, Colin Millen, Bob Black, all household names, of course. Well, not, but anyway, well-known in anarchist circles. And lo and behold, one of those essays has actually got my own name on it. How come? Well, I was a subscriber to Freedom at the time. I received it by post every fortnight. It had been inviting readers to submit articles for consideration for its centenary edition. And I thought, why not? So I sent in an 800-word piece entitled Anarchism, No State, No Market, which they accepted. Just to say, by the way, that Freedom sadly is no more. It carried on publishing for quite some time after 1986, but then moved to monthly publications in 2011. And after 2014, it stopped publishing on a regular basis altogether, just putting out the occasional edition, the most recent one, I think, being May 2019, but Freedom Press as an entity still does exist. Anyway, that article I submitted, entitled Anarchism, No State, No Market, I'll try and briefly outline its arguments and make some comments and hope that that will provide some material for discussion. I took my cue from one of Donald Room's famous wildcat cartoons in Freedom. The caption to this particular cartoon said, "You get rid of governments by convincing people to withdraw support, and then you get rid of the thing they govern, the state." I began by quoting that approvingly, but then I suggested that the next question had to be, what kind of stateless society do we want? What would be the main lines of a society not managed by the state? And I suggested there were two choices here. You could either have a stateless society with a market or a stateless society without a market. I went on to say that if you were an anarchist who didn't envisage getting rid of the market, either because that seemed too difficult or for some other reason, then you were effectively, whether you liked it or not, and whatever you called yourself, you were effectively some kind of anarcho-capitalist, a sort of free marketeer. We were talking about this the other day. In one of these sessions. Why? Because whether you say it explicitly or not, if you keep the market, you're talking about keeping buying and selling, keeping trade, keeping money, and keeping all the financial paraphernalia of capitalism, even if there's no state or no national frontiers. In that kind of arrangement, private ownership extends to everything imaginable, and the ethos, even more than now, is likely to be unbridled competition. Now, of course, most anarchists don't call themselves anarcho-capitalists. I went on to say this, and they would deny that they want that kind of anarchism. If pressed, in fact, they would probably say that they do want to do away with the market system. But in the article that I'm talking about, I went on to say, how often do we find that explicitly stated in their literature or other pronouncements? Very rarely, if ever. I went on to say that this was a pity, because if they did state that explicitly, they'd have an answer to the reaction they often get from people who tell them they've got nothing practical to replace the present system with, or that an anarchist society would just be chaos. if they did make that statement about no market, I went on, they'd be able to say what we say. There is a practical alternative, one in which the market, which is the real chaos monger, is abolished and people organise society collectively and democratically on the basis of providing for needs using the earth's commonly owned resources. This, I argued then, and I would argue now, would be good for anarchists, since it would make it easier for people to accept that what they were advocating was not just chaos. So how does socialism relate to this? Of course, anarchists often don't like the term socialist, as they associate it, as most people do, with the Labour Party or the old Soviet Union or places like China or Cuba or Venezuela. And maybe, in fact, we'd be better off ourselves using a different term. But we know what we mean by socialism. And of course, it's got nothing to do with any of those things, which are simply different models of capitalism. Socialism for us is in fact, the diametrical opposite of the authoritarian tyranny that is sometimes called socialism. Socialism is, in fact, the only arrangement that provides a sound basis for a truly free society, which most, if not all, anarchists would probably agree they want. So I concluded my piece from 1986 in the following way. I wrote, "It may or may not come as a surprise now to the reader if I say that I consider myself a socialist. But when people say to me, as they sometimes do, isn't what you're talking about anarchism? I readily say yes, as long as by anarchism you mean not just a society organized without a state, but also one organized without a market, because that, after all, is the only road to freedom." Okay, sorry it's been a bit long as these things go, but hope I've given you some food for thought. So over to you. I mean, there are quite a lot of people here. Do we want to operate the same kind of system we use for the talks, where the speaking queue system?
Well, we could do. It's up to everybody here. I tend to favour the kind of suck it and see approach.
Okay,
really.
Okay. Let's use suck it and see. Okay, I'll throw it open for discussion then. Right.
Well, I'll just say something. Well, just quickly, I really enjoyed that, Howard. I think that was a really clear and lucid take on anarchism, which does really point out something really important that I hadn't ever really thought about it that way, but the way that you put it, you can sort of see that, yeah, if anarchists would actually sort of recognize their common interests in getting rid of capitalism, getting rid of property, society and the markets and stuff like that, that would remove a lot of the misunderstanding between them and us. But the fact that they don't think about that very much, I think you've highlighted a really key thing there.
I take a different angle on the argument, although I agree entirely with what you said, Howard. The anarchists that I've come across don't rationally follow their arguments through. They say they're against the system, but what exactly do they consider to be the system? No, usually it's bits and pieces of it. It isn't the whole system. However, as far as the title of the subject matter this evening is concerned, shouldn't we be the anarcho-socialist party of Great Britain? As you pointed out, ideas for a free society, originally came from socialism. Anarchism, originated with socialism, came out of socialism. Yet, if you use that, if anybody was to use that title, it serves the impression that socialism comes out of anarchism, which is untrue. Historically, you know, that is not a fact whatsoever. So we would only be serving further confusion if we were to describe ourselves as an anarchist or anarcho-socialist party. So the more we keep away from it, the more we make sure, you know, we draw up the distinctions and illustrate, like you've done very well, the difference between our type of reasoning and our mindset, right, than the anarchist mindset.
I'm not really suggesting we should call ourselves that, actually, Frank.
If I could chip in, I sort of prefer the term anarcho-socialist. Now, I do sometimes use it. I'm not sure if I'd go the whole hog and think the party should change its name to that. That's a slightly different question. I think one reason why I prefer the term is because both the terms socialism and anarchism, as we know, you know, they've got umpteen meanings to umpteen different people. Even if you use the word socialist, you, as we all know, you've then got to qualify it by, you know, distancing ourselves from others who've hijacked the name. But the term anarcho-socialist, because it doesn't have a sort of wider number of connotations, it can sometimes be easier for people to get a handle on as to what we're about. So I think it's got its benefits in that way, because the word is more sort of up for grabs, if you like, because it's not a widely used term.
A few years ago, since nobody's coming forward at the moment, I did a debate at head office, Clapham High Street, with a well-known anarchist called Ian Bone. Some of you will have heard of him, I'm sure. He was once described, I think it was by the People newspaper, as the most dangerous man in Britain, because he was the founder of an organisation which some, or if not most of you, will also know, called Class War. And Class War used to, he had a sort of violent agenda. It was that kind of anarchism. He had a feature every week or every month when it came out called, I can't remember exactly what it was, doing something to a copper anyway. It wasn't kill a copper, but it was kick a copper or something like that. That was the kind of thing. So that was the kind of thing that Ian Bone was into. But he was actually more sophisticated than that, because he also wrote a book which was published by Class War in the 90s, or was it the 80s? I've forgotten now, called Unfinished Business, The Politics of Class War. And for me, what arose from reading that book was that the main differences between them and us, if you like, is that, first of all, they didn't have the same class analysis as us. They considered that there were three classes in society. So a class in the middle of capitalists and workers who sort of assisted the capitalists in their dirty work. You know, yuppies, posh bastards, trendy bugs, but backstabbing hypocrites, people like teachers, doctors, social workers, civil servants, and so on. Anarchists had to oppose not just capitalists, they had to oppose them as well. That was one difference. The other difference is that they saw revolution as somehow coming violently by an uprising of the most oppressed. So that was the view that the Class War took and still take. I think Class War is still around just about anyway. I think we would argue that their call to violent action is futile, and that there's no evidence that violence helps to radicalise people or spread revolutionary ideas among them. However, I should add that Class War's website, if you look at it, says the following about the SPGB. It says, despite the name, they're not authoritarians. They are, in fact, pretty cool. Check out their newspaper. So, you know, go figure.
I'd just go back to something that Brian said earlier. I think I don't know much about this, but Brian said something about, socialism didn't come out of anarchism, anarchism came out of socialism. Is that actually true? Because I was under the impression, I don't know too much about this, but I was kind of under the impression they were really quite separate currents, and they didn't. It's not the case that one was descended directly from the other. That sounds a bit like sort of proprietary one-upmanship going on there. But, I mean, you know, is that actually correct what you said there, Brian?
I think we need Adam here. He knows about all those things. He would have been able to tell us, but he's not turned up.
Right, yeah. I thought it was, because I thought they had come. Does anybody else know anything about this? They sort of come from kind of different backgrounds. Anarchism had come from the kind of individualist, Stirnerite kind of thing. And socialism, well, when Brian said socialism, I presume he sort of means sort of Marxism. I presume that's what he's talking about. And that was much, that came from a more sort of materialist background. So there were two quite distinct schools of thought, as I recall, that sort of first clashed at the First International between Marx and Bakunin, and have been kind of clashing ever since to some extent. Does somebody else want to clarify that at all?
Well, the William Morris thing suggests that at least in the latter part of the 19th century, they were quite closely related. I mean, William Morris called himself a socialist, and you know, the Socialist Party often sort of refers to William Morris as an early socialist, even if he, you know, didn't live to see the foundation of the SPGB. Yet here he is sort of giving a talk to the anarchists on the subject of communism, which suggests there's sort of, you know, quite a lot of interaction there.
I meant to say before, if anybody wants to see the pictures in links, useful links, you just click on the picture and that enlarges it. You can see it, not full page, but a lot bigger. And then you can read what it says on it. Not sure everybody's quite got the hang of Discord yet, but that's what you can do.
Oh, yeah, it works well, that, yeah. Yeah.
Can I pick up on the things that Mike Foster was saying? Interesting thought, Mike, that anarcho-socialism is a term that's in a way up for grabs because it's not widely used. I think the doubt I have about that is that, okay, that name isn't widely used. Well, of course, both halves of it are, anarchism and socialism. We have a mountain to climb all the time trying to disabuse people of the misconceptions they have about socialism. And if we were to change our name to the Anarcho-Socialist Party, we'd also have to climb a mountain because of all the many and varied versions of anarchism which there are. So we have a double job of trying to make clear to people where we stood on a whole range of issues. And you can imagine, you know, a lot of people, if they heard the phrase anarcho-socialism, would probably assume, A, that this was an organisation that favoured violence, because a lot of anarchists do, and B, that it was concerned to establish a strong state, because a lot of people who call them socialists are in favour of that. So, I mean, taking seriously the idea of changing our name, I think, would have to meet all of those difficulties and would make it, I think, not an attractive proposition. However, there's a separate question from that, a separate question from any matter of naming the party, and that is whether there's a case for making a particular effort to aim propaganda anarchists. I think there are some reasons for doing that. I mean, there's a whole lot of shit that you have to wade through with a lot of people that we come into contact with. For instance, about human nature. For instance, about our rejection of leadership. And just to give no other examples, just in those two respects, we're not on such an uphill track talking to anarchists. I mean, we are not going to have to weigh through all that stuff about human nature. We're not going to argue against any kind of political leadership. And that seems to be the beginnings of a case for saying that we should perhaps focus our efforts on anarchists more than we do. At the moment, we just simply have a scattergun approach with our propaganda. We just try to get anybody to the will. And it may be that we should try and make that a bit more focused. Thanks.
Was I the only one that found I couldn't hear what he was saying because there was so much echo on it?
Yes, Mike, it's a problem that we've got with Keith's microphone. We're not sure what the problem is.
Right, because I couldn't understand a quarter of it. Can I just ask, Howard, who was the person who you called a persistent, what was the word just coming up, the persistent opponent? Was that George Walford? Because I remember him producing some sort of a magazine. He used to come to party meetings in the early 90s and hand out. I'm sure he was the one that an ex-party member, wasn't he?
Actually, Mike, it wasn't me who wrote that. I think it was Paddy. So maybe Paddy's got more idea than me who the person was who would write to the Socialist Standard about that. Could have been George Walford, yeah. Any idea, Paddy?
I think it was. Yeah, it was George Walford. He just kept calling us the Anarcho-Socialist Party over and over, you know, as if the more times he said it, the more annoyed we'd get. And, you know, as I wrote, you know, a lot of us weren't bothered. Even the people who didn't agree weren't bothered. But, you know, but a lot of members just thought, well, yeah, why not? Partly for the reason Mike Foster says, actually, although because taking full you know cognizance of Keith's cautionary counter argument that of course you might not get the best of both worlds, you might get the worst of both worlds. I mean, it really depends who you're talking to, doesn't it? If you're talking to some sort of dyed-in-the-wool Daily Mail reader who's going to think the worst possible things about anarchists, then you probably wouldn't say that you were a narco-socialist. On the other hand, if you are talking to somebody from class war or various libertarian anarchist groups like the ACG or something like that, and they didn't know who you were, you'd probably be better off calling yourselves a narco-socialist. I mean, I tend to use some libertarian socialists in you know, if I think that'll be understood. It's just a shortcut sometimes. If you say words like that, libertarian or anarcho-socialist, to some people, you can see them get it straight away. Whereas this is, you know, where I agree with Mike Foster. You know, if you just say socialist, it's like, you know, yeah, typical left-wing Labour Party, the SWP trot. No, as soon as you can get away from that very quickly by judicious use of these, a couple of these terms. And incidentally, you know, the proposition wasn't, anyway, this evening, anything about changing the party name. That was never a proposal. It was simply that this guy, Walford, and other people have said in the past, well, why don't you just call yourself a narco-socialist party? That's what you are. You know, so we thought it would be interesting to see how many members actually sympathise with that view. That, yeah, you can fairly describe us as that. I mean, I certainly think it's a fair description, you know, with all due qualifications.
Hello? Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Hi. Yeah. Sorry to interrupt. I'm Nick Sampes. I haven't actually joined the party, but I'm interested, and I've gained access to this through Steve, I think.
Yeah, you can. No problem, Nick. Carry on, yeah.
Well, I live in Cambridge, actually. I've recently retired. I'm a retired engineer. But over the last few years, I've taken a lot of interest in the political situation, so I guess starting with Brexit. But... And then I read quite a lot of stuff on the state of capitalism with the neoliberal approach, and went through various authors like Thomas Piketty, read quite a lot of Noam Chomsky, etc. But I kind of late really taken a lot of interest in anarchism, and I kind of see myself as an anarchist, and I was wondering how that would go down with you guys. I have been joining a few meetings with the SWP, the Socialist Workers Party, as well, but I'm finding there's a lot of guys there that seem to be very, very keen on a sort of authoritarian Marxist approach, and aren't particularly too welcoming towards this kind of stateless approach, non-hierarchical view that the anarchist theorists have. I just wondered, what was there a general consensus in the SPGB on this? Is it a wide view where people are kind of interested, kind of follow a sort of authoritarian Marxist view, and or others you prepared to accept people with a more libertarian view on the left? I'm not sure who to ask this question to. Perhaps Howard.
A few points there, Nick. I think what Keith said earlier is relevant here, that we've got quite a lot in common with anarchists. You know, there's a lot of stuff that we don't have to get out of the way because, you know, there's the sort of common ground, you know, human nature, etc., stateless society maybe. We have a lot in common with them, much more so than, say, the SWP, who you call authoritarian Marxists. We wouldn't call them, we'd certainly call them authoritarian. We call them Leninists, actually, authoritarian Leninists. And our view is that, you know, if you look at Marx carefully, don't sort of believe everything he said. But nevertheless, I mean, ultimately what Marx favoured was a society which abolished the wages system from each according to ability to each according to need. So in that sense, you know, we're definitely Marxists, but not authoritarian Marxists. In fact, we see that as a sort of contradiction in terms. So, yeah, I mean, I think you'd probably find more of a welcome, so to speak, given the ideas that you're developing in the SPGB and the Socialist Party than in most of these sort of left-wing groups, which tend to, as I say, have sort of Leninist-oriented leadership, Leninist authoritarian orientations. Don't know if somebody else would like to say a word to Nick on this. Does that make sense, Nick, anyway?
Yeah, there's some interesting points. I attended a talk last week or the week before with an SWP group in, I think it was in London somewhere, North London. It was on Rosa Luxemburg, actually, who, you know, is certainly someone to admire. But when I raised some points about her disagreements with Lenin, that did not go down well at all. So that made me feel a little bit uncomfortable, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
It's interesting you were saying about anarchism and the problems you have of, I don't know whether anybody's come across Ruth Kinner. Do you know Ruth? She's a lecturer at Loughborough University.
Has she written a book recently on anarchism?
Yeah, she's got...
I've heard on the radio, yeah.
She's been on there's a podcast with Radio 4, Melvin Bragg.
Right.
And she's on there with Peter Marshall talking about anarchism. I mean, obviously they're both academics, they seem to have some useful ideas. I mean, Ruth's written a book called Anarchism, A Beginner's Guide. It's only a couple of hundred pages. And you can, I mean, I've just downloaded the PDF. You don't need to buy the book. But a lot of those problems that you were talking about earlier, Howard, with respect to even using the word anarchism, it conjures up this idea of of you know, terrorists destroying the state, whereas, you know, certainly Ruth Kinner and a lot of the theorists like Peter Marshall, etc., would disagree with that and point people towards, you know, all these major anarchist thinkers in the 19th century, you know, like Proudhon, Bakunin, and Peter Kropotkin, especially. You know, it is a big challenge, I know, for the anarchists. But I mean, one of their differences to me seems to be, you made references to the First International and the disagreements between Marx and Bakunin. I think that was in The Hague, the fifth conference of the International, where they went their separate ways. It was the big red flag split, because Marx insisted that, you know, on this authoritarian dictatorship of the proletariat, you know, judging that workers weren't really capable of controlling the state without the direction of Soviet party officials, you know, and what Kropotkin was arguing, Bakunin was arguing, that this would lead to a totalitarian regime. And if you look at what's happened with the Russia, Cuba, China, and others, he seems to have been proved correct. Kropotkin believed that as well. And it seems that, you know, the anarchist movement is more about a sort of top down. And the anarchists believe that in the Russian Revolution, you know, the Bolshevik Party effectively stole, because it was originally anarchist driven, but they stole the, acted as a sort of counter revolutionaries, and then, and, you know, they ended up with you know, on the death of Lenin, and then Stalin implementing this his totalitarian staring regime. So I kind of I think that's one of the reasons why I'm kind of attracted to anarchism as well. I don't know whether anyone's looked at the stuff that that Murray Bookchin has wrote, you know, particularly his things on social ecology.
Yeah.
Does anybody have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, we had a film on a documentary quite recently on this site that a load of us watched, with quite a lot of Murray Bookchin in it, from the 1980s. Really interesting, actually. It's, I'll see if I can dig out the link if you're interested. From 1980s, Anarchism in America. Murray Bookchin's really good. It's really funny. He comes across like a sort of New York taxi driver a bit, you know.
Well, he's Jewish. Yeah, lives in New York.
Just something you said earlier, though, about the, you know, the sort of Marx-Bakunin split and this kind of idea of the authoritarian dictatorship of the proletariat. I've got a feeling that sounds really like that was kind of Lenin's interpretation on what Marx was saying. So I think there might be a bit of confusion about that aspect. Marx wasn't proposing, and, like, you know, we're not proposing any sort of authoritarian revolution. I think the what happened with Lenin and the Leninists, basically, nowadays, they don't believe that you can have a democratic socialist, or, if you like, anarchist world revolution that's not led by, you know, small cadres of professional, you know, leaders. You know, they think that's how it has to be. We don't think that. We think the same way as the anarchists think, you know, that... This is kind of what we're discussing this evening. We were just saying, before you were talking, we were saying sometimes it's actually easier to get our politics across to people if we say, think of us as anarcho-communists or anarcho-socialists or even libertarians. You know, because socialists like us do exist, you know. This kind of libertarian school of thought that doesn't Mavin doesn't believe in leaders and all that sort of thing. It is also present, you know, there is a socialist current in that. We are definitely part of that. But, of course, the Leninists, the authoritarians, they're the ones with all the big banners and make all the noise, you know, and so it's easy to think that, you know, Marxists are all kind of, you know, sort of zombies that follow the icons, like the Donald Room cartoons always made out Marxists to look, you know.
Nick, if I may, thinking that the party, the Socialist Party, will take power, that's not how we see it. In fact, once the revolution comes about, the Socialist Party will disband. It won't be taking power. And the other thing in regards to the aspect of leadership, we disown leaders, but we don't disown leadership. What we say is that once you become a conscious socialist, you automatically become a leader. Right? In other words, we are all capable of becoming leaders, and especially for ourselves.
Let me just add one other thing that I forgot to say. I was going to say one of our members, Paul Edwards, actually, it was posted. I discovered an email from him the other day, which I'm sorry, Paul, I overlooked it at the time. I didn't notice it, but it was a link to BBC Radio 4's In Our Time, you know, with Melvin Bragg, when they did they discussed Marx, who out of a big poll had come number one in 20th century philosophers. So Melvin Bragg, who's a pretty sort of pronounced anti-Marxist, hauled on Francis Wheen, who's done a biography of Marx, and A.C. Grayling is also an academic sort of writer on Marx, and somebody else, I forget. And he tried to get them to agree with his view that Marx was in some sense responsible for what happened in the 20th century in his name. And they all of them said, no, no way. That was other people distorting what Marx was saying. He would have revolved in his grave at what happened in his what was done in his name in the 20th century. I thought it was really interesting because they're all sorts of very posh academics, and I assumed they were going to just kind of, you know, take a very quite a negative view, but not at all. They solidly, and even when Melvin Bragg said, but surely you must accept that at some level Marx was, you know, partly to blame, and they went, no, not at all. He was completely distorted by Lenin and other people who came after us. Really worth watching. In fact, in useful links, I'm just going to post the link to that In Our Time thing now. I've just gone and found it. Yeah. It's really interesting. It's a good hour's worth. Some of them are a bit sceptical about Marx's ideas about the post-capitalist society, but, you know, okay, fair enough, they're sceptical about that. But on the central question of is Marx, you know, is this Marxist Leninist thing, they were like, no, totally not.
Yeah, yeah, Melvin Bragg failed miserably, didn't he?
He really did, yeah.
I was wondering whether we could call upon somebody who's written books on Marx in this gathering, Keith, to say a word. He may be put off by the fact that Mike could hardly hear him. I should say that he was a bit distorted, but I think I heard quite a lot more than Mike did. So I don't know whether Keith wants to say a word about this business of the dictatorship of the proletariat or whatever. He might not want to, and if not, fine.
Can I say, read my books? If I could say it in 2 minutes right now, I wouldn't have bothered writing the books.
Okay.
Good book. I recommend it.